Radio Prague News. The Chamber of Deputies passes a law banning smoking in some public places. The Czech Republic confirms its 20th case of mad cow disease. Popular Czech singer Helena Vondráčková wins yet another case against a tabloid paper. Britain's Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott held talks with the Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek and Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda during a brief visit to Prague on Wednesday. The ailing EU budget for 2007 to 2013 and the need for a re-evaluation of spending priorities were the main topics of discussion. All three politicians also agreed that the European integration and enlargement processes must continue despite the rejections of the EU constitution by France and the Netherlands. Britain takes over the EU presidency from Luxembourg this Friday. And the Lower House of the Czech Parliament has been very busy on Wednesday. It passed a law that bans smoking in public places. If approved by the Senate and signed by the President, smoking will be banned in public administration buildings, schools, sports halls and cinemas. However, Christian Democrat Deputy Josef Janáček says the law is a victory for the tobacco lobby, as it fails to introduce a total ban on smoking in theatres, restaurants and bars and workplaces. These places have the option of installing non-smoking areas if they want to avoid a complete ban. The law also restricts cigarette sales from January the 1st next year. Cigarette sales from vending machines are banned and the shops allowed to sell cigarettes will be restricted to mainly tobacco shops and supermarkets. The lower house has also approved a bill enabling referendums to be held on a range of issues, including the EU constitution. But the right of centre opposition Civic Democrats voted against the bill in the lower house and will most likely block it in the upper house, where they hold enough seats to reject new constitutional laws and amendments. The popular Czech singer Helena Vondráčková has won her second case against the Czech tabloid paper. A Prague court ruled on Wednesday that the daily Blesk will have to pay a heavy fine to Mrs. Vondráčková and her husband Michal for an article published in November 2003 claiming that he was psychologically unstable. The couple had sued for 1 million Czech crowns, but the court ruled that Mrs. Vondráčková was to receive 50,000 and her husband 200,000 compensation. Blesk will also have to apologize and remove the article from its web pages. And tests have confirmed the Czech Republic's 20th case of BSE or mad cow disease. The state veterinary authority reported on Wednesday that the infected cow was from a herd close to the North Bohemian town of Liberec. Over 100 cows will have to be slaughtered as a precautionary measure. I'm Dita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Coming up, the bad news, higher license fees for viewers. But the good news, no more adverts on Czech public television. An American gay men's choir visits Prague, while the city hosts a major Czech studies conference. And later, a selection of the best entries in this year's Radio Prague Listeners Competition. License fees for public broadcasters, Czech television and Czech radio have always been the subject of heated debate in Parliament, especially in 1997, the last time those fees were raised. For the last 8 years, every Czech household has paid the equivalent of $54 per year to Czech radio and television. Now that appears set to change. On Wednesday, lawmakers agreed to dramatically raise license fees to almost double over the next 3 years. Jan Wellinger has more.
Other big changes were also passed. With the exception of important cultural or sporting events, all commercials on the public broadcaster will disappear. Earlier we spoke to Glasgow University's Jan Čulík, asking the media analyst how he viewed the coming change.
It's a question whether a public broadcaster should have advertising. The British Broadcasting Corporation doesn't actually carry any advertising on any of its channels. And this is one of the points when you listen to public service broadcasting, you don't have to be annoyed by silly advertising for alcohol or cars or various other things, which are basically very repetitive on the commercial stations and an incredible source of annoyance. Having said that, there is an often used argument that in small countries, like Ireland, for instance, the number of population will not produce enough money from the license fee payers. They do run some advertising. It is actually quite justified, but very, very little compared to what Czech television has had. To sum it up, I don't think that advertising should have been present on a Czech public service broadcasting channels to such incredible degree.
Many observers are likely to be pleased by the eventual disappearance of ads from Czech TV, but it remains a question whether the new rise in fees will be enough to support the broadcaster's budget. Some, like government MP Tatiana Fischerová, worry it will not, one reason why she did not back the bill in the end. The culture minister was another. Jan Čulík agrees that it was a mistake, for example, that Czech lawmakers did not guarantee further rises according to inflation. He says that is an attitude of trying to have your cake and eat it too.
Czech Parliament is behaving slightly hypocritically. On the one hand, they want public service television or radio. On the other hand, they refuse to pay for it. I think this is a kind of syndrome harking back to communist times. Many of the MPs basically feel, well, what is state, what is public service is kind of secondary. This is not true. Normally, in the West European countries, what is public service is regarded absolutely as higher quality, the model to be emulated by the commercial stations, not the other way about.
And will the loss in commercials benefit Czech TV's rivals, the dominant private broadcasters TV Nova and TV Prima? Certainly in the short term, the stations will gain a boost, swallowing up additional income worth £1 billion per year. But eventually they too will have to face the reality of coming digitalization, which will break open the market, bringing down cost for advertisers, spreading ads over far more channels.
This advantage which the Czech Parliament has now given to the handful of terrestrial television commercial broadcasters will go away. So let them enjoy it while they can, but it's a question of a couple of years.
Jan Čulík on the phone there from Glasgow. And now some music. The 150-member Boston Gay Men's Chorus is one of New England's largest and most successful choirs. It's broken ground in affirming the positive image of the gay community in the United States and is now on a tour of Europe. After highly successful concerts in Berlin and then Wrocław in Poland, the chorus is now in Prague, where they'll be singing in one of the city's great concert venues. In Catholic Poland, their concert was preceded by noisy anti-gay protests. So when he met up with the chorus's executive director, Stephen Smith, Radio Prague's David Vaughan asked how they'd been received so far in the Czech capital.
Absolutely great. I mean, people are so friendly, very positive about our being here. We knew coming to Prague would be a great experience for the chorus. It's stunningly gorgeous. I'd only seen Prague through pictures, and it really does. It is the storybook that everyone says that it is.
But I gather that it's not pure coincidence that you're here in Prague just as the Czech Parliament is discussing for, I believe, the third or fourth time, the possibility of introducing gay and lesbian marriage or registered partnership. Are you engaging in that debate even here in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, I think certainly we'll be singing several songs about that. As you may know, in Massachusetts, a year ago this spring, gay and lesbian marriage became legal. More than 23 of our members have already married. Many had been in long-term relationships, but finally got married. And we've been very active in the fight in the States, and I think we're working with the group here called Gay Initiative, and we're really glad to sort of lend our voices of support to help people understand why gay and lesbian partnership and marriage is really great for gay and lesbian people and for society as a whole.
And you're going to be singing in one of the great Czech venues. It's the Dvořák Hall of the Rudolfinum, which is really the great concert hall in Prague. Are you nervous?
Not nervous, but really excited. The whole tour began 5 years ago, and the place we knew we wanted to go first was here to Prague to sing at the Rudolfinum. Certainly his reputation is international. So that really got everything started. So it started with the music, it started with coming here to this concert hall, and it's the great finale to the trip.
And what are you going to be singing?
Well, as always, we sing a great variety of music, from classical to popular music. So you'll get that with us. There are Copland Old American Songs. We're doing a newly commissioned work that's about gay and lesbian marriage called A More Perfect Union. Wouldn't be us without some show tunes, so a lot of Gershwin, and music about gay and lesbian pride.
Well, you've brought with you a recording of some of the things that you sing. Let's listen to a little bit of a piece called Marry Us. Could you tell me a little bit about this?
Yeah, it's a song that was created about 7 years ago, before gay marriage became a realistic issue in the States. So when it was first written and we first sang it, it was really out of hopefulness and wistfulness. Now it's come true, and in Massachusetts, it's become our unofficial theme song.
The Boston Gay Men's Chorus there with a song called Marry Us. Now on Radio Prague, from music to literature.
It was long, long ago when last I gazed on that dear face, kissed those pale wrinkled cheeks and tried to fathom the depth of those blue eyes in which were hidden so much goodness and love. Long ago it was when for the last time those aged hands blessed me. Our grandmother is no more. For many a year she has slept beneath the cold sod. But you used to say, upon this earthy ball, not a soul that pleases all. If, then, a few readers shall find as much pleasure in reading about you as I do in writing, I shall be content.
An excerpt there from Bojana Nemtsova's 19th century novel Babička, or The Grandmother, one of the most important and popular texts in Czech literature. The 150th anniversary of its publication is being celebrated in Prague this week at the Third World Congress of Czech Literary Studies. The Congress is held every 5 years and is organized by the Czech Academy of Sciences, Charles University, and the National Literary Archive. This year's theme, The World in Czech Literature and Czech Literature in the World. Bernie Higgins spoke to Elena Sokol, one of dozens of academics who flocked to Prague for the Congress.
Well, the Congress this time is especially dedicated to the poet Vladimir Holán and the very well-known woman prose writer from the 19th century, Bojana Nemtsova. Each day there will be special sections devoted to Holán and Nemtsova, and then there will be a series of sections devoted to other areas of Czech literature.
And you will be giving a paper on the highly regarded but as yet very little translated into English author Daniela Hodrova.
That is true. I am going to be speaking about the novels through a feminist or a gendered lens. I feel that Hodrova's work, while it is acclaimed and well known among specialists of Czech literature, it's, I think, not been seen in its proper context of feminine writing.
And in the 90s, you've been particularly interested in making contact with women writers and focusing on that.
That's exactly what happened. When I came here, I was still doing my own research on Russian literature, but I became very interested in Czech women writers and have completely switched my research interest to Czech literature and am focusing on the contemporary women writers, especially those born after the war, beginning with Hodrova, really two generations, ending with Eva Pekarková, and I'm working on a book devoted to these two generations.
This will help to spread the word about the Czech literary scene. How aware are the American reading public of Czech literature, do you think?
Well, I think the American reading public, if it's aware of Czech literature at all, is aware of the male writers Havel, Hrabal, Kundera, Klíma.
Tell us more about what you hope to gain from the World Congress of Czech Literary Studies, and is there anything of particular interest to you in the very rich program?
I'm especially interested in learning more about Bože Němcová, because as I've learned from my interviews with the contemporary writers, Božena Němcová is really the source for them. She is the grandmother of contemporary Czech women writers.
Elena Sokol there from the College of Worcester in Ohio. She's in Prague for the World Congress of Czech Literary Studies. And now, as promised, a special look at some of the best entries you sent in this year's Radio Prague competition.
This week, we treat our loyal listeners, especially the beer lovers among you, to a special edition of Panorama. Now, beer has been measured in the Czech lands with degrees, according to a method devised by one Professor Balling in the 17th century. But calibrating the strength of a poem, essay or story about beer is a less exact science, and our staff has had a hard time choosing a winner for the 2005 Radio Prague Listeners' Competition. This year the topic was, What Czech Beer Means to Me?, a weighty question to which the English section alone received over 200 replies. A French listener won the competition, and we heard her entry in last week's mailbox. We now treat you to highlights from our favourite English entries. First, let's say a few words about what beer means to Czechs. No self-respecting Czech would sit down for a traditional dish of roast pork, cabbage and dumplings without a half-litre mug of liquid bread to wash it down, and if at all possible, fresh from the tap with a frothy head. Bottled beer is a distant second. Canned beer is for tourists. Czechs drink more beer per capita than any other nation on earth. They invented Pilsner and make cheese and soup from the stuff. Even the music seems to inspire beer drinking. Roll Out the Barrel is actually a Czech song, Škoda Lásky. Czechs take great pride in now international brands like Pilsner Urquell, Gambrinus, Radegast, Velkopopovický Kozel, Budvar and Staropramen. They support their local brews like most people do a home football team. Foreign beer sales hardly make a dent among the locals, making up less than 2% of sales. But not everyone is Czech, and not everyone is a beer lover. Here's an extract from one of our competition entries.
I will confess at once, I did not like Czech beer. Don't misunderstand me. I have nothing against the Czech water or hops used, and nothing against Czech brewmeisters and their illustrious tradition. I am an equal opportunity non-beer lover. Mexican, Indian, Belgian or American beers also leave me cold.
Alon K. Raab, a Radio Prague listener who grew up in Israel but now calls the American state of Oregon home, kept a safe distance from Czech beer on a tour of the country, whilst indulging in local spirits like Slivovice, a plum brandy, and Burčák, traditional young Moravian wine. Turning down gracious offers of Czech beer, the pride and joy of a nation, writes Mr. Raab, was an exercise in diplomacy. It was a visit to the Sedlec Ostrovy that turned him. 3 decades earlier, Mr. Raab had seen the Czech animator Jan Švankmajer's film about the Bone Church and made a teenager's vow to visit it.
When we left the grounds and headed towards the town of Kutná Hora, we passed a pub. Now I'm ready for a cold beer, I announced, surprising Rachel. We entered a wood-paneled establishment adorned with beer emblems. I scrambled through my pocket dictionary. Pivo, prosim. A beer, please, I ordered, hoping that I did not mispronounce the words and accidentally insult the bartender's mother. He smiled and indicated a wall tablet listing dozens of varieties. I pointed to a name next to a dark, frothy image. He turned to a spigot and filled a large stein. The foam rose. Nazdravi, cheers to your health, he said. It was good. Very good. Excellent. Superb. I ordered one more. This time the words rolled from my lips. It was good to be alive, with the nourishing Czech beer coursing through my bones, my very alive bones.
That was quite some conversion. Now, many of the 200-plus entries we received were on the whimsical side, such as this entry by Irish woman Deirdre Murray, who listens to Radio Prague from Brussels.
Czech beer sure means the world to me. It makes me laugh and it makes me pee.
And this from Yaron Kidron, from California in the United States.
Crafted in Plzeň or brewed in the East, you're my Czech love affair, my sensational feast. You're my potion of life, born in water and wheat, fluid gold to my senses, and my perfect retreat.
While Chinenye Odika, I apologize if I mispronounce your name, of Kaduna, Nigeria, who as far as we know is young and healthy, nevertheless wrote,
experience has taught me that it is either Czech beer for me or nothing else. If you asked me to make a last wish before I died, I would ask to be served the Nigerian national meal, pounded yam, okra soup, and cooked sardines, and a cool bottle of clear, refreshing 10-degree Plzeňský Prazdroj, after which I would gladly rest in peace. That is how much Czech beer means to me.
Na falešnú lásku nebudu nic dbát, holauty dati nebudu nic dbát.
Listener Jonathan Murphy hails from County Cork in Ireland, a stout-drinking nation if ever there was one. He informs us that Nigeria, by the way, is the second-largest market for Guinness outside Britain and Ireland. Mr. Murphy sent in a delightful account of his trip last year to the Czech Republic, in which he was faced with a dilemma, what to drink in an Irish pub in Brno, whilst supporting his native hurling team, Cork having made it to the All-Ireland final.
Ignoring the Guinness on offer, I took the plunge, pointing to Pilsner and mumbling, Pilsner prosim, I feebly hoped to be mistaken for a Czech punter. You're here for the match, then? Inquired my compatriot.
Having hoped to keep a low profile and avoid the wrath of true Irish patriot Guinness drinkers, Mr. Murphy quietly made his way up to the back room in the Irish pub. He was amazed to find that his fellow Irishmen had all made the same choice.
There wasn't a drop of the black stuff to be seen. Every story has a moral, and I'm still trying to figure out the moral of this one. It seems that many either Irish have a similarly favourable encounter with Czech beer to mine. Once tasted, it becomes the next best thing to a pint back home.
And staying in Ireland, Roy Kitson of County Down, Northern Ireland, was first introduced to Czech beer in 1991, when he was football correspondent for the local newspaper. His guide was none other than Karel Bruckner, then coach of the Olomouc Football Club, who today coaches the Czech national team. They spent a long evening together and have remained friends ever since.
Though he was too polite to actually say it, I believe that Mr. Bruckner thought that the Czech brew was definitely superior to our Irish varieties. Karel promised to introduce me to Czech beer when I was to visit Olomouc for the return game in the football competition, a fortnight after the first match in Bangor.
Olomouc won both matches, but Mr. Kitson has been a Czech beer convert ever since and a great fan of the culture, which he says is reflected in the superb beer which the country produces. Now, many of our listeners are not surprisingly of Czech origin. For them, the taste of Czech beer can be powerfully evocative.
Fresh beer was my father's Sunday ritual, every Sunday, no exceptions. The key was, it had to be delivered with a fresh foam head. Of course, as any other young boy coming in terms with this big responsibility, I always sipped the beer along the way. Especially during the summer, the sun and cold beer, nothing better.
That was part of an entry by Petr Osichka of Ontario, Canada, one of several listeners who recall being sent for a jban, or jug, of fresh beer to bring home from the local pub, and got a hiding for sampling the wares along the journey, as did Peter Rohel of Toronto, Canada.
What young boy could resist carrying a jug of beer and not taste it when it's so near?
Our final reading today is from a letter by Zdeněk Kutak of Calgary, Canada. In 1974, he was a young refugee studying at the University of Western Ontario, along with a handful of other exotic Czechs. They had little contact with their homeland.
We often reminisced about the favorite pubs we left in 1968, and so many friends who shared our liking of a good bulliter.
That summer, he traveled to the Yukon and Alaska and stumbled upon a band of Czechs.
One day, deep inside the northern bush, I came across not one, not two, not three, but across at least a dozen Czechs. They were the real trampi, friends way back from the day, or perhaps even the First Republic. They hailed from all over the world, Australia, South Africa, Europe, North America. They were friends whose love for nature, for the lure of the Yukon and friendship, made them meet every few years in the most unexpected corners of the world. Out came the guitars, the overused songbooks. I was too young to really fit into this group of rugged tramps and their world of rebellion. Yet I felt strangely at home with this bunch that sang Czech songs and drank Czech beer in the midnight sun of the faraway Yukon. Today, more than 40 years later, I still recall the taste of Pilsner and hear the refrain to Cesto do Cordoby potkal jsem dvě vdovy in my ears. Perhaps never again will I feel such a connection to beer as I felt then. Long live Czech beer.
All those thoughts on Czech beer are giving me an absolutely terrible thirst. But before I pop out to a hospoda, let me just say thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and do join us again soon.
Mám mě rád, kytky mi noc zívá, já čekám ho s večeřím. Z hospody, když se pak vracívá, tak zase...